It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. We've got just a big week and a fun week here in the world of golf. Coming off the heels of the Colonial, we've got the Memorial coming up. We've got most of the world's best golfers in action. We've got just absolutely riveting performances going on at the college level in the NCAAs. And Kyle Porter, man, How are you balancing everything right now? We're going to get, by the way, later in the show, we're going to get into Matthew Wolf and a little bit more there. But, man, this is some heartbreak for the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Yeah, it's not good. I'm not in a good spot.
check out Pistols Firing, by the way, as always. I saw you really poured your heart into it.
I got out ahead of everything after the stroke play and said, look, like, we can crown a champ. You can crown him, but I already know who the best team is. And sure enough, you know, match play strikes again. Yeah, we can talk NCAAs in a little bit because that was. I've got some takes on the NCAAs, and I think maybe unexpected takes. Maybe people don't expect the takes that I'm bringing. But yeah, Colonial was interesting. You know, Kevin Na wins. Here's what I was thinking about with Colonial, Chip. The thing I was thinking about with Colonial is Kevin Na, and this sort of was spillover from Koepka winning. And when Koepka won the PGA the week before, and I know we talked about this, there was such an opportunity for him to just eject, shoot a 79, and just get out of there. Like, you have that right in front of you, and it's easy to hit the eject button. It's really hard to not hit it when everything's going against you. And Kevin Na had an opportunity on the back nine on Sunday. I know he was playing great, but Finau was within two. He's playing a couple of hard holes, the 13th at Colonial, the par three. Had an opportunity to hit the eject button, and he went after it. And he went after a couple pins that were in tuck positions. He made a par, he made a birdie, and then he cruised home. And I think that is emblematic of what it takes to win on the PGA Tour. And it sounds simple and straightforward, but I think it's something that you're either born with or maybe you learn it over time. I think guys like Kevin Na have learned it over time. You have to go after it on Sunday late on the back nine, and he did it, and he ended up winning because of it.
So he and this conversation does stand right there in that wonderful, confusing back and forth for, like, does winning matter? How much should we value winning? What does it take to be a winner? Like, can you win it on a Thursday, or can you lose it on a Thursday? What do you need to do? Are Sunday rounds overvalued? Are they undervalued? There is an imaginary line in the sand that you're describing in which you get the feel of what it takes at the end of a championship to be able to go for it. So is Kevin Na being across that line in the sand mean that some of these other players who, based on strokes gained, based on scoring average, are among the very best in the entire PGA Tour, but they have not yet in their career figured out how to cross over that line?
Are you talking about Tony Finau?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's my favorite conversation in golf, and I know it's one we have all the time from a variety of angles. And I just it's hard to, like, take a stance on it, like, across the board, because different players are wired differently, and you don't know what's going on inside them, inside their heads. You know, I know Paul Azinger always talks about what's in your heart. Like, you know, he says that, he's like, what's going on in your heart? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe that's the answer sometimes, but is that always it? Like, maybe he just had a bad shot. And, but look, here's the thing. I want to see Tony Finau win something. Like, winning does matter. I mean, it doesn't matter again. Like, we could go, I could do this forever. It doesn't matter as much as we act like it does, but it does mean something to go out and grab it late on a Sunday. And he didn't do it. He hit a borderline shank on the 16th hole, you know? And so it's like, what am I supposed to do with that? And I know, like, it probably wouldn't have mattered because Na closed and didn't make a bogey and birdied the last and whatever. But I don't know. I know Finau shot a 68. He played good on Sunday, but late when it mattered, he didn't go grab it. And we've seen that time and time again from him. Justin Ray had the stat. He's got like 21 or 22 top tens in the last couple of years, which is by far the most without a win. Fleetwood's got 14 or something. So for both of those guys, it's like you want to go see it, or you want to see them go get it late on a Sunday.
From the experience of playing golf, do you feel, and you know, there have been the stakes have never been, or maybe they have for you, have been on the level of a professional golfer. And, you know, especially when we think, as I've got the NCAAs in my head, I think that there is something to win a tournament or a match is hanging in the balance, to be able to get aggressive, to choose that I'm going to go after this pin, and then to be able to execute it in the game that is forever going to be, decided between, as Jack Nicklaus said this week at a press conference, the 5 inches between your ears. Like, I think that there is a value there. I think that there is something that, as I am trying to become less abstract and more concrete in my analysis of golf, I do think that it is worth being able to point to that intangible advantage that you can create if you're able to get over. And, you know, whether it's not that it would be a lack of confidence, but it takes a supreme confidence in your own abilities with no insecurity to be able to block everything out and play at a high level in those moments.
Well, and I think people's perception of pros is that they're just robots. Like, they just hit the same shots no matter what kind of pressure they're feeling or where in the tournament they are, what day it is. And that's just, I just don't think that's true. And I think that,
except for Brooks.
Well, even hit like, yeah, well, except for Brooks, but even he acknowledged that, like, the drive on 16 at Bethpage on or 15, where he hit it 350 up the right side and made par on the toughest hole on the course, like how big that was to kind of turn the tide around, you know?
Yeah.
And there's no way he didn't feel and think about that stuff. And so to mentally overcome that, that's a really, really difficult thing. And here's the thing, Chip, like, it's not like you can practice that a ton. Like, the only practice that you get at doing that is being in it, which how often do these guys, are they in it on a Sunday? It's pretty rare, right? Like, a couple of times a year, maybe, if you're really good. And so we talked about this last week with Johnny Miller. Like, he said the ability to win multiple majors mentally is something that you're just born with. And the reason he said that is because it's not like you can't, like, learn to do that over time. I mean, you kind of can, but you just don't get the reps, I think, it takes to be able to mentally overcome the challenges that you face. And I know we're talking about majors versus, like, Colonial with Kevin Na, but it's the same sort of application for maybe a lesser player in Na than Koepka at a regular PGA Tour event. Like, you don't get those reps. And if you do, then it takes a long time to get there, as we've seen with Na, who didn't, you know, won once for like 10 years, and now he's won twice in the last 13 months or 11 months.
So, yeah, I was going to say, for Na, we've got 3 PGA Tour victories, 2 of them in the last year or so. Statistically, he's negative. Like, statistically, he's pretty average, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, not truly elite in many places. Earlier this year, he had T10 at RBC Heritage, good finish at the match play. What's the QBE shootout?
It's not an official event.
Okay, so nothing that would
fake news.
I was going to say, he is not a player who is regularly in contention. And so that's where I also draw it back to Finau, a player who is in contention often. And that that's, I don't know. I don't know how to, I find myself downgrading Tony Finau as we start to, you know, play things forward. And as we start to look at, you know, who's going to be contending at the U.S. Open, that's something else we'll be getting into later this week. But as we start to, you know, think about where these guys stack up against each other, why am I continually frustrated with Finau, and is that unfair for it to influence my analysis?
You're continuously frustrated because he, like Patrick Cantlay, Tommy Fleetwood, like, even, I mean, it's the Fowler thing, right?
Yeah. But Fowler at least won other tournaments.
Yeah. But he's only won, I mean, Fowler's also been on tour for a lot longer than those guys.
Okay. That's fair. So, I don't have a professional memory of the beginning of Fowler's professional career.
I mean, he won early. Like, he won, like, his, I don't know, 10th. I mean, I think he won in his rookie year. He beat Rory and who else was in that playoff? Somebody's hollering at their, at this podcast right now.
Hey, Sean, what's the answer?
It might have been Lee Westwood. I don't know. But at Quail Hollow, I think it was 11 or 12, whatever the tournament was called back then, but the Wells Fargo. By the way, how much money do you think Kevin Na has made in his career on the PGA Tour?
I would say, let's go with $21 million.
He has made, it was DA points, 2012, that Fowler beat. Kevin Na has made $30.1 million.
That's strong.
He's played in 25 tour events in 14 different seasons.
Where do you stand? There is a conversation in the golf ether that I haven't really ventured into. I think that our friend Brendan Porath and the Shotgun Start, I think, must be on it, because that's where I see some of the conversation starting. Is there some fake news hollering about the career earnings list being something that matters?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the old no line up trope was that, like, there's a Tiger tax that everybody should pay. Like, every check that you earn, you should pay a tax to Tiger for increasing the purses. And so the fact that, like, Charles Howe is
for protection, for protection on the industry and the sport.
Yeah, seriously. Charles Howe is like 17th all time in earnings, which, I mean, look, nobody loves Charles Howe more than me, but come on.
17th best golfer. Yeah. All right. Hey, one last thing on Colonial before we move forward with stock up, stock down. And this might as well be a little bit of an analysis as well. The putting from Jordan Spieth had, we went stock down on Spieth last week and he putted out of his mind, got a lot of hollers from listeners, which, by the way, you can always holler at us at Kyle Porter CBS at Chip_Patterson. What's the final grade on Jordan Spieth and his performance at Colonial?
I mean, I'm doubling down. It's smoke and mirrors, dude. It is. It is, as, and I wrote this after Colonial. It's as, like, he's carrying as many mirrors and as much smoke as the PGA Tour will let him in his bag around these courses. Like, he's not hitting the ball well. And you saw it on Sunday. Like, the putts don't fall and you shoot 73. Okay, like, that's how you're playing right now. And so, look, is it good for him to see the T3s and the T6s by his name? Sure. Like, I think mentally that's valuable. I think there is real value there. But get back at me when he starts hitting the ball good.
Mm.
And that's the thing. Like, going back to, and he talks about this, like, 17 was his best year. It wasn't 15. 15 was his most fruitful year. 17 was his best year. He was number one in the world from tee to green. He was the best ball striker on the planet. And he's the 130th best this year or whatever. And after every round, it's like, well, you know, I found the swing I was looking. I found the slot, the, you know, whatever I'm looking for. Found it. Got it. Okay. Well, can I see it? Like, can I see the results from it? And I'm not talking about making a 46-foot putt, because whatever, that's unsustainable. I just want to see it from tee to green, and he hasn't showed it yet. But here's the thing: we were talking about this in our group chat last week. If he finds it at all, Like if he finds this, his, you know, at Memorial this week, even like Pebble is so perfect for him because it's not long. He's going to win multiple US Opens. I think he's won there before, you know, he is so intriguing going into the US Open. I don't think he's going to win based on how he's hitting it right now, but just show me like three rounds of swinging it well, and I'll think about picking you for the US Open.
I will remember for a long time your comment about walking with Koepka and Spieth on
Saturday,
where if you closed your eyes, the sound would make it seem like one guy was shooting a 67 and the other guy was shooting a 79.
Yeah, that's what it was like. I mean, and that's been all year for Spieth, right? Following him at the Masters, you're like, this dude is like can't find the center of the club face. And look, he is smart enough and so good at scrambling and putting and chipping and whatever that he can kind of fake his way around, but you're not going to win like that.
Stock up, stock down, plus what we think about the NCAAs coming up right after this.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
And now it's time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. As always, we are breaking down, sort of checking the stock of some of the game's best players. And as we are spinning this ahead, we're looking towards the Memorial, which is one of the best fields. And our official Memorial preview will come up in the next show, which will include our picks to win, sleepers, and more. But we'll have no Brooks Koepka, no Dustin Johnson in the field, but we do have pretty much all the other heavy hitters. So let's start with Rory McIlroy. Stock up, stock down for the man who has 9 top tens this season, and yet no one seems to like him as a heavy hitter.
Yeah, we'll do these as kind of quick ones because we got a bunch of them, but I'm stock up on Rory at non-majors right now. And it's been interesting, right? Like he and Brooks have really contrasted each other. Because Brooks is like, you know, he's played well at some non-majors, but not a ton. And Rory's been lights out at non-majors. And then you turn to the majors and Brooks is T2 and wins. And Rory goes T21. And then the I don't know if what's beyond the back door, like the back shed door, the to my office. Like that's what he entered at Bethpage. So yeah, I just at a regular PGA Tour event, there's nobody I have more confidence in right now.
All right, Tiger Woods, since the missed cut at the Masters, he hasn't been in action. Him playing here has to give a little bit of confidence. And though I think we said on a previous show, I wondered if him playing was as much for the obligations of the things he was going to do this week with the press conferences. You know, we're recording this here on Wednesday. He's doing the round with Peyton Manning. He's given Nicholas the hug. They're sharing an intimate moment. Like it feels like Big Cat for this particular tournament is a little bit still much on the victory parade. In terms of the golf, are you stock up, stock down?
I'm stuck down, and the reason he'll probably go out and win now, but the reason is I think in the same way, you know how guys will go out in like T2, T8, T3 and then win, mm-hmm. but then like right after they win, they don't do anything for a while. I sort of feel like that bigger picture with Cat right now. Like, I feel like he was like building. He wins not only a major, but the Masters. And it's almost like, and I don't know if he's doing, I don't think he's doing this on purpose, but you almost put it in neutral mentally.
Right.
And I sort of feel like that's where he's at. I mean, maybe not. I've had like two rounds of evidence for that, but I'm really interested to see what he does this week and at Pebble.
Because he's won at Memorial. He's won at Muirfield Village 5 times.
Yeah. 5 times.
And he doesn't have to hit a lot of driver, right?
Yeah. He's, I mean, he, last year he finishes like T23, I think. And he had, I think, literally the worst putting week of his career. Like, he lost like two strokes around. I mean, it was unbelievable.
I used the Tiger Woods high floor analogy for Augusta. I feel like it is very, very prescient here at Memorial. I am not going to pick Tiger Woods to win, but I do not think we get another missed cut.
No, I agree.
Bryson DeChambeau, the defending champion at the Memorial, stock up, stock down, or stock getting thrown like a club?
one of my favorite tweets of all time was from the Open last year when Bryson distributed his clubs all over the driving range at Carnoustie.
Right.
And Porath said, like a distressed artist throwing his paintbrushes all over the art room. it was so good. Can you tell me when Bryson's last top 10 was on the PGA Tour?
I think it was at Memorial.
No, that'd be bad. He won in the fall, but Sony. January.
He hasn't been good. The stock is decidedly down, and not only is the stock down, I'm worried that the stock may be down for a long period of time.
Yeah, I'm going the other way, actually. I'm buying. And here's why. I was looking at his numbers today. He's 25th in from tee to green. So it's not like, and now part of that, it's hard because part of that is that he played well at the beginning of the season, like last fall, like October, November. And so that is maybe artificially inflating it a little bit, but he's had some bad putting weeks. I don't think he's like the 50th best guy from tee to green. I think he's at least the 25th best. And so I don't think he's going to go lower. You know, I think the putting will rebound. And I think he'll have some good weeks. So I'll go stock up for Memorial.
What about Justin Thomas?
This one's hard. I think up, you know, he hasn't had a top 10 since Mexico. Part of that is he hasn't played. He finished T12 at Augusta. I don't know. Are we worried about him?
Yes. I'm stocked down, but I don't think I am. I'm looking at Justin Thomas with less permanence in terms of one. Like I do not believe, especially going into Memorial, that it's going to be easy to click back in and have it all rolling and to be able to have a leaderboard finish against a field like this that is going to be along the lines of what we would expect from a player who has been ranking among the best players in the world for the last 2 years, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the last guy to miss a major because of a wrist injury.
Who's that?
Brooks Koepka, 2017.
Oh, that's when he fell in love with golf again, right?
Or 2018. and then he won 3 of 5.
No. Don't try and tell me that Justin Thomas fell in love with golf again. The baseball player who wasn't good enough at baseball that he had to play golf might have fallen in love with golf again. The child like grew up on a golf course, doesn't need to fall in love with golf again. I could see Justin Thomas at this point in his career. He's got a major. He's performed well. He's got a couple wins. I could see Justin Thomas not really in a hurry to rush himself back. And what I'm looking for out of Justin Thomas is probably a little bit more of like the the details, like not necessarily his leaderboard finish, but does it look comfortable? Is the ball striking there? Is his proximity to green really, really solid? Like that, those things I think are the building blocks for working Justin Thomas back into the conversation as being one of the best players in the world.
Yeah. Do you think JT will win a US Open in his career?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
I think JT would be a candidate to become, by that time, I'll assume like the sixth, seventh, or eighth career slam golfer, except for the Open.
Yeah, he hasn't played well in the Open. I think I'll go stock up just because I feel like people haven't, I don't know. He's kind of fine under the radar right now, honestly, which is weird to say about a top, what is he, sixth in the world, fifth? I don't know. And I mean, maybe deservedly so because he hasn't been around, but yeah, I'll go stock up at Memorial. I think he's going to come back strong.
And our last for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade, Matt Kuchar, who is number one in the FedEx Cup standings on May 29th, 2019, here, now. Matt Kuchar is number one in the FedEx Cup standings.
Yeah, Andy Johnson, the shotgun start, has a great thing where he wants Koepka. I think this was Andy. I don't know. It might have been no lineup. I it all melds together. But somebody was talking about how they want Koepka to win all the majors, but Kuchar to win the FedEx Cup. It would be so good. How about Kuchar at Muirfield Village, though? He has one finish outside the top 15 since 2010. He's at 10 top 15s here in his career. 10.
Stupid.
His strokes gained. So Data Golf does a great deal where they do like historic strokes gained at a specific tournament or a specific course. And he is, he's number one, like, and they've only tracked it since 2010. So it's almost a decade's worth of data. He's number one. He gains almost 3 strokes per round on the field at Muirfield, which is a silly number. He's been unbelievable there. So I'm going stock up. He's having probably the best year of his career. If he doesn't win a major in the next year or two, and we've talked about how the Open was probably his real chance. But if he doesn't win one in the next year or two, he's probably not going to win one. So, I think he's getting his right now.
And that was Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. And now we turn our attention to the NCAAs, where Matthew Wolf was, the individual winner. And, you know, we talked about our golfers to watch heading into the weekend. Let's see, Victor Hovland ended up, T8 or something like that, right? Hovland.
Yeah. You want to do this on our Memorial preview? Cause I got, we might go too long here. I got too many takes. I do have real quick. I do have a stat of the day for you, Chip.
All right,
you want my stat of the day? We'll bump it.
Yeah. Let's get stat of the day.
Okay. Stat of the day. Charles Howell III is the all-time leader in rounds in the 60s at Oklahoma State. Do you know how many rounds in the 60s he shot in his four-year career at Oklahoma State?
I'm going to need to know some comparison for what our total rounds are going to be.
Oh, those guys play between 30 and 40 rounds a year, I think. I think Wolf played 35 this year.
So between 150 and 160 in a career?
Yeah, more or less.
I'm going to say Charles Howell III had 95 rounds in the 60s.
That's pretty high. 42.
Okay.
So 42 rounds in the 60s.
All right.
Matthew Wolf, who's been in Oklahoma State for 2 seasons, shot a 69 in the final round of the stroke play portion of the NCAA championships. It was his 39th round in the 60s.
Go pro. He's now gone.
But if he stayed 2 more years, he would more or less double Charles Howell's 4-year record of rounds in the 60s at Oklahoma State. Mm. That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
2 years to almost match the school record of rounds in the 60s. He's the all-time scoring leader, single season, career. I mean, nobody at Oklahoma State has ever had more wins than him through two years. The previous record was 4. He had 6 this year alone.
Are we talking? I mean, all right. Maybe we'll save that for the next show.
Yeah, let's save it. We'll talk about Wolf. We'll talk about match play. We'll talk about some USGA stuff, and then we'll do picks for Muirfield.
You follow him on Twitter @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.